Mr. Cutter, Reel 10, you were explaining about the problems of driving across a pontoon bridge. This was across the Rhine, wasn't it? The Seine, sorry.
Maastricht. Going across. The only way is probably really going to go is when we go up the barges. Of course, the tactics at the time we had the looking to have the mastery of the air. But it was a very tricky job, go very, very slow, 3, 4, 5 miles an hour at the most. And of course, there again, just when you go from one barge over to the other, see the companies and the matadors were on the back end of the barge would come up. As you were leaving, it would level itself out. And of course, there again, you had to be careful in case where the wind was going down the back of the wheel, at the both ends of the barge didn't come up and jam on the meeting, but luckily we had no trouble like that. And, because we got across all the way to the tunnel. When we were crossing the River Merse.
Not the Seine, of course.
We were not the Seine, of course, yes. Exactly, yes. Exactly.
And it's all right. What do you remember next, then?
And I think when we got to the other side, we were looking for a small town called Meagat. And from there, it wasn't. From then on, there wasn't a great lot of action. It was just now and again people just wanting to support because we were getting well into Germany then. And then from there, I think, as I say, we started to go through the room and we finished up in a place called Crayfield. And the problems of Crayfield was a place called Getter, just outside of Munster, which was a city thinking then.
What do you remember about the actual end of the war? You know, the European War, VE Day.
Well, when it came through, of course, VE Day wasn't ended. It was in August.
VE Day was May 5th.
4th. When we got to that hospital, that was everything that was happening. People were out to join, very pleased that it was all over. That was the one we were doing in the front of the field.
Was it much of a party?
Well, not really. There was nothing to celebrate about, I don't suppose, really.
Why not?
Well, we had 7 years of it, and we were just glad that was all over, and all we were thinking about was now how long was it been before when the mob starts and comes up and get ourselves home.
And, I mean, you knew the war with Japan was still going on. Were you worried about being sent out to the east?
Well, there was a little bit of worry because we've been an experienced regiment, and having a good name behind us, there was doubts and little worries. But at the same time, we heard that things started to get better out there, so to finish, I don't think we really started to worry about the finish.
Now, where were you billeted at Gesher?
Gesher was in a school. Nice lovely school, of course. There was no children at the school. Nice lovely school.
Was the local population still about?
Oh, yes, there was one village. I had no children with them.
Were they friendly at all?
Well, of course, there was no fraternisation.
That was a rule?
That was a rule. But if you had to speak to them, well, it was pretty... that was a monster. And of course, after that, on fatigues, the matadors were all emptied out. And of course, the jail had no transport. And of course, then they brought in the occupation of the Rhine, the BR, British Army of the Rhine. And then we, the vehicles that were on detours, were taking coal and coke, except in jobs like that, for them to take to the hospitals. Because I remember one day I was driving one particularly day, then one of the matadors, and we had two or three Germans on the vehicle with us, you know, for loading, because we were going by, so we were going to take a window and making. And they were rather surprised at the speed. The vehicles were going, you know, in sign language, you know, how many, what you're doing, you know, 50, 50. And and then going, I think it was the Snell which went faster than me. I kept saying, no, it's not 50 kilos, it's 50 mile an hour, it's 50 mile an hour, it's going twice as fast as 50 kilos. And then you can see the expression on the face that the speed of the was good, we're out to the pass and the size of the vehicles. But we've got on very well with the public, you know, trouble in there.
So you're running these errands from Gesha around the local areas?
That's right, yes, down to the local hospital in the places where they need, in other words, help. Because they had no transport, you see.
So you'd pick up the coal at Munster, would you?
Pick the coal actually at Munster. The Germans would load it, you see. And they'd get locked up with me and then they'd deliver it to the hospitals aware of it, but it was nowhere that would happen to you.
Well, did you have anything to do with the displaced persons camps in the area?
No.
So you weren't taking...
Yes, we did, actually. Well, it wasn't displaced persons, it was actually was captured some of the high officers. There was a big prisoner of war camp there. Most of them remember now. They were all barbed wire and wire. And that was one of my duties later on, to go around and check to see that the compressors, the generators was working at night, you know, because for the light of the searchlights going in into the compound. And that was, of course, the light. That's what we told the lads going on there with different guards. It was quite a high ranking.
But you don't know who?
I don't know who, no.
And what else were you doing during this period?
Well, that was it. The goods were just parked up in the schoolyard, and the vehicles were just parked up in the schoolyard, and back to the same carry on of just keeping things clean.
Was there much black market going on, or involvement in the black market?
Not that I can remember, because there was a statement that if you were caught, you were caught, you were in the consequences. I can't remember any of that going on.
What about recreation? You know, how did they keep the lads amused?
Well, we had to make our own from sports. We had the football side going in that again. The cricket and the likes of that, and actually where we were getting was an open swimming bath, which used to get into there as well as keeping yourself clean, but it was an enjoyable pastime as well. And of course later on, some of the Germans would, as we got on, some of them would come out of the bath as well. Because I remember the caretaker, the kind of chap, he said he was all right, you know, what you're doing, how to go on. The caretaker was good enough. You know, it was just made out of the fact that we were doing it, it was football and cricket.
I know a lot of the army in Germany started up education schemes and classes, you know, in various subjects for the men, sort of getting them ready for civilian life. Was any of that going on, or were you involved in any of that?
I can't remember any of that.
What about, what happened then?
Actually, just a case of just everyday duties, back to the old army stints and gone parade, dismissed them.
Did they return to, was there much bull, or was it reasonable, you think?
No, there wasn't any bull, things just kept reasonable. As long as it was kept in order, in case of emergency.
What about your uniform? Were you expected to
have... Well, we got ourselves tidied up. If you needed new uniforms, you were issued with them.
But there wasn't too much...
There definitely wasn't too much in order.
And were you keen to get demobilised yourself?
Well, I suppose so, because by that time, when we first landed this country, the minister said I'd met this union, who was going to eventually be my wife. And of course, I came on leave, on a fortnight's leave from Germany in September, 45. And that's where we got married. And when I came on leave, of course, he holds a single man, the same way I went back as a married man, because that was all in your mind then. Hold, demob.
So from September on, you were very keen. Were the men restless, or were you restless, or?
No.
So what happened next then?
Things just was more or less just the same, the same more or less routines and that, different on different doors. And we used to go out and have a look around some of the places and villages that we used, such as Bockham and the Passings, west of what it's pronounced, Basel, if I remember. And of course, the damage that had been done in Germany, we had to actually look and see. Building that was standing up. Now, you always remember a village in a small town called Wuppertal. We were wondering what all these very high poles in the town. It was the first town that I ever saw these that had the tram cars. They used to be around. Instead of running on the road, they keep the roads cleaner. They used to run around on these, on the cables and that, around on the track. On the top of these pools that was in the baseball book, so I always remember that. Which, being a mechanical man, you know, I was rather interested in it. In fact, Germany, I could see my own observations of Germany before the start of it being wonderful and a beautiful, good, clean country. Different again to France. Because when you're in France, you have to be very, very careful. When you pull up the road, especially with the vehicles we had, normally you chop a few trees down, get a few blocks of wood to put on the leaves, but the next morning when you went, the vehicle would be down. And sometimes it was only the body that was stopping from being down.
It would sink into the ground.
The drainage just blew out the land.
So how long was it before you got your DMOB?
It was DMOB on March the 10th. 1940,
so, what did you spend between September and March doing? Just staying at Gesher?
Went back home and just in Gesher all the time. And of course.
When did you leave Gesher then? When did you leave the regiment?
That was then, the end of March. That's where that's from. There were still men to be demobbed after me, you see. Don't forget, there was men going before me, which was the older men. And I was in group 20. I'm sure there's group 27 or something. It was 10th of March when I got demobbed.
That's because the regiment finished at the end of February, yeah. Right. That would be right.
Right. And then you see, before I went, you see, there was a lot of your parts going, men that was older, you see, you had this mob before, you know, because naturally you're missing them, aren't you? How many people get up and work for old parts and that?
Would they have parties when they left, demob parties?
No, not really. Just a good shake hands and look after yourself and. Funny enough, I didn't contact many people after the war. Until then, I came up to the barracks in Yorkshire. We came back, we landed in Yorkshire, and we marched from the barracks in Yorkshire. Got out of equipment, I remember I got a trilby hat and a sports jacket and a pair of ordinary.
Was it decent stuff?
Well, it was good stuff, yeah.
What about any money?
When I left the army, the demob money I got was £89.
That was quite a lot of money then.
£89.
And what were you going to do? Were you going to go back to your own? You'd been apprentice, you know, fitter at your father's quarry.
Yes.
What did you plan to do?
Funny enough, after what had happened after the war, by that time, you see, I was married and I was living up in Newcastle, which was 15 miles away from the old home beach. And of course, I had 4 months leave in service abroad. After the fortnight, it was so boring, I went around to look and get a job again. Well, my father kept on to us all the time because he was the manager of his quarry and he wanted me to go back there again. And I thought, well, after travelling all around the world and being stuck in a quarry, looking at four wars all the time, you know, and I thought to myself, oh my God, I just couldn't stand that. So my father said, well, you're a big lad, you're a big tall bloke, your next best bet. When you go up Newcastle, go down to prison if you can get into police. So, which I did. I went down to Newcastle, went down, and I got the message up, and I couldn't get into police because I was quarter inch too short. And then days, you had to be 6 foot. And I'd rather take the back at you because the sergeant was all over you. You know, he says, you're the fellas who want that. You know, go down. And he says, you expect yourself a quarter of an inch, come back, and I'll be in. So at the finish, I thought, oh, the pop of that. So on making my way home from the prison, I passed the United Bus Depot at Gallagher's. So I was driving it. He's back in the old hobby. So I went into United Buses, explained the situation, saw the former there who I remember his name, Mark Wood, High Corson, good man. He took it out in the test. He said, when did you start? I said, start any time you like. And you remember I started it on the 15th of April, 1946, on the United Buses, with John Wood Depp.
As a driver?
As a driver.
And how long did you stay there? Was that a steady job for you?
It was a steady job. And I was there for 2 years. And in fact, funny enough, one of the first to take you round in the bush, you know, to show you all the roads. Well, I had some good roads from Gallagher. Wasn't town work in the court with you, but you know, we used to get to Carlisle, Allendale, Allen Henson, all the long distance London. And the only shoes I had at that time was these brogues. I got from the army, and he's number one particularly here. It was a very hot day, and only with the car line. By the time I got there up to Cornbridge, I was actually drowning in my stocking feet. Because the brogues had rubber soles. You would draw your foot, you know, bend it, to finish up with it. To finish up drowning in my stocking feet. So then I came back home, I took the shoes away, you know, got the foot, got the soles in that one. As I say, I was on there for a matter of 2 years, and if you remember at the time, the wages was £5.10, and that was with working on your rest day, which we were only too glad to do. In the meantime, the old firm was starting to get the lorries, but there was no building or anything going on, you couldn't get the lorries. It was about 2 years later when the vehicles started to get the vehicles back.
What, your dad's quarry?
That's right, your dad's quarry. The firm was called Edward Clark and Stan McCallum firm. We got three vehicles back. One was a Comer and two Austins. And my father got on, it was against his radio. So I left the United Business and I went back to Clark and I started there £7.10, which was a big change.
As a driver?
As a driver.
And fitter? Or?
Driver and fitter.
So, and you stayed there for a good while, didn't you?
I stayed there. I stayed there driving for about 18 months. And my father was getting on a bit, so he says, well, will you take over? So he retired now and back into the coin, took over the job, just with the foreman and the planters, and the planter, and etc., etc.
Now,
and then, I was there in 1962. It was getting a bit heavy for us, because I was getting on a bit known. Hard work was all open, big excavators and that. There was a job actually being advertised in the Evening Chronicle, which was the local paper form, the former Gator Corp. And applied for a job in a button position. I was there to form the Gator Corp. And about 4 or 5 years after that, all the North East Corps from Scarborough to Edinburgh all amalgamated. And I got the position as general foreman.
Now, how do you think the war had affected you, you know, from the young lad that went in to the man that came out?
Well, we had some bad times in the war, but we had some very, very good times. We had the thing is, when you come out, you miss the comradeship. So when you were in the bush, you know, you taught yourself. When you were in the army, there's always somebody with you. You've always got company. Nothing less about the young.
You're in the old Comrades Association, you're in the South Notts one, I know.
I'm in the South Notts, that's the only one. Well, you see, when I was at the quarry, I never even had time to join a club with the British Legion or anything, because the position in the job was, when you were working out on streets, if there was a machine go down, you had to get it ready, get it mobile, otherwise you were taking up the job and you were going on, so you were working from more tonight. In fact, I remember one day I went out on the Monday and I didn't go home for Thursday night. That's a tight and particular job it was. As I say, later on in 42, I started getting heavy for it.
So when did you join, 62, when did you join the Old Comrades Association?
The Southwest Disaster, I went down there, my wife died on December 1981, and it was 2 years before that. It was 1979 when I made an effort.
What made you decide to make the effort then, after all those years?
I've been thinking about them all the time. But as I say, with the position I was on, I'd never had time. And also, my wife was very, very ill with cancer. And I would never, never leave her. And I didn't want to go away to come back. And I thought, well, this particular year, I'm going to make the effort, and I'll go down to Nottingham City. And of course, when I got down there, I was here, because I hadn't seen this.
They all recognise. I mean,
the last time I was on the phone, that was Harper. White was at the back, and I heard her shouting to him, "Stop calling him Jordan, give him his real name, Reg." He was at the back. Of course, what a wonderful time. And then, after my wife died, I made it the regular. Business, and I've never missed. I've been down there every year since. It's a good, enjoyable time, because every year the attendance is getting smaller, naturally, because we're all getting older. We have a good and wonderful, no drunkenness, no, you know, it's all a good, wonderful experience. And we have a big meeting, the dinners, you know, on Saturday night. On the Sunday, the whole streets are not even closed down. We have a marvellous parade, and it's funny, for all we're getting on, aches and pains and all that, you know, except in all me back, all me legs. But once you hear the band strike up, it seems to get through you, you're away. And that's it, you have a good time.
Do you join the keep in touch with them, the 74th, lad? 74th Regiment?
Well, I've never been anywhere, just about 2 seconds, because you see, it was disbanded. You know, we don't look at the 274th in the regiment. And now it's the 101 in the regiment.
So they are, you don't see them as your regiment anymore, the South Knots Hussars.
I was with the South Knots Hussars for 4 years.
Now, one last thing, just to finish it. You were, there's a story I wanted about how you were called up in 52, or they tried to call you up in 52. Could you just tell that story? Probably a time of career.
Well, as I say, one particular day the postman came and I went to the door, picked this letter up, got big headlines in the top of His Majesty's Service. I thought, oh my God, what's this for? Opened it up and it was forms to fill in for to go away on the Z training. So I thought, oh, the pop of that, the war was going on and it's still in the Far East there, so I just tore it up and threw it in the bin. So a week later, the same thing again. So I'd opened up and done exactly the same thing again. But 2 or 3 days later, was the third one came. But instead of the delivery by hand, knock on the door. And on the top was all in red letters. In other words, get these forms filled in or else. And of course, I just put them on the table. And when I went out, my wife had got a whole new paper, which is I started filling that form because she was getting herself worried in case the American police came for us. So, I did fill it in. And of course, I've got our calling up here, and I had to go down to Towin.
Towin?
Towin.
And what was your Zed training?
I hadn't a gun, it was absolutely nothing. No guns, no nothing.
How long was that for?
A fortnight. And it was under tents. And luckily it was all those guns, clearing in the morning, shouting your name out, then that was the order to get lost. That's true.
So was there any point to it at all?
No point to it at all. It was an absolute waste of time. It was anti, there'd been an anti-aircraft site there, but there was no guns at all. In fact, I remember when I went to one of the first men I saw, there was an RSN, a chap called Driscoll, who'd been in the 74th Field Regiment. I said, well, what's going on? He said, we have all of you people now. He said, at first, when you were in the artillery, the fact that he was a traitor, and then they were transferring us all from regiments to go into the Remy. And then you were what they call attached to a regiment, whereas before, you were in the regiment as a fitter. And then, of course, after that, you were went to the Remy, you see, but I never was about.
Did you have any, there was no training in that either?
No, absolutely nothing at all. To me, in fact, all the men were just were down with the time.
After the war, had you ever thought of joining the territorials or going into the regular army?
Well, actually, when I first took the bomb, I was in second thought. I like the army. I know to finish the war, we started to wear it down a bit. But after travelling all around the world, it's a different little business sitting in one place all the time. And I mentioned this to my wife about, well, I think I'm joining up and going into the army again. But of course, at that particular time, the war in the Borneo and Malaya was going. And I thought, well, if I join up now, we want experienced men again. I'll be back straight out there and probably get killed walking across the streets in Hong Kong or somewhere. So my wife turned that down, and that's how I finished up on the United Bushes, and of course, I went back to the fire.
Now, you've got a poem you'd like to recite that sort of sums up your days of the South, not just ours.
Yes. And it's simply called The War Years. In 39, when war broke out, it was started by the Huns. The Hussars were numbered, and so they got some guns. At first, it was the 25s, and off the war they went. But after losing all of them, some new 5.5s were sent. They didn't know, they couldn't tell, where the hell to put the shell. But one day in September, it was 1942, a letter came addressed to me. By chance I opened it to see. 'Twas from my old pal Winnie, to see I was transferred. And being a Geordie Hinnie, I went without a word. And landed with the Notch Hussars. They couldn't speak my tongue. But I worked on them from morn to night, until they did, by gum. I showed them where to put the shell, and to the breach just there. Then you pull the lanyard, and it flies right through the air. We worked so hard and trained like hell to get ship-shaped for battles. Then at last the day came round, we spun 5.5s like rattles. So after holidaying in Tobruk for 9 months in the year, where food and drink are plenty, and always women there, pictures, parties, drink-ups too, and one fine day back up the blue, to a little place called Alameen, where we had to stand and fight, until one day in October, it was a Friday night, all hell broke loose at 20 to 10. Old Jerry didn't know what had hit them. 1,000 guns, all in anger. We had no time to think or pander. We bombed and shelled for 3 whole weeks to knock old Rommel off his peaks. At last it worked, and we broke out, and so the enemy we did rout. From that day on, we never lost. After 3 long years, what a terrible cost. We then went on to win the war, and I thank God there's been no more. Now this one is called My Number One. My old friend Hamble Harper, who was my number one, and me being a driver, I towed his 5.5 gun, up and down throughout the vales, through the fields and through the dales, night and day, never stopping, until some jellies we saw popping. Then into action we would go, rain or sunshine, wind or snow, in or out of action, as quick as we could be, then away from the front line to have a cup of tea. 9 other men in the crew, of which we must give them due. We worked like hell together to beat the common foe, but going to the bog house, only one damn fool. He kept me right throughout the war and taught me how to swear, and if I didn't get that gunner right, he went up in the air. He got us all out on parade, so he could bawl and shout. You stupid nits, you blinking fools, came pouring from his spout. We felt like dirty rotters, being treated just like mules. So drop your pants, short arm check, but with your little tools. And after we were cleared, we felt like stupid hens, before we got our punch up, out came the good old wrens. They'd been there a peeping, so Nelson was good spy glasses. We'd been threatened look like a lot of foolish ashes. But all in all, we got on well. When the war was on, we went through hell. Now the war is over, we meet just once a year to have a chat and dine out and finish in good cheer. It's always nice to go and see my pals of long ago go on parade and go to church and to my home once more.
Thank you very much.